From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 50 of Little Brother, dated the 4th of September, 2021. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for rebuttal. So, let's get started. The T-Mobile hacker has been identified as John Binns, a 21-year-old American living in Turkey. He claims that T-Mobile security is awful and that the goal was to generate some noise. Mission accomplished. Given that T-Mobile has been hacked similarly and repeatedly in the last few years, there is little doubt that his assessment of T-Mobile's security is valid. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, have added single-factor authentication to their list of administrative bad practices. Single-factor authentication is where you use just a PIN or password to prove your identity, or where a measure of use, such as a fingerprint or a face recognition, is used by itself to see if you are who you say you are. Typically, authentication factors fall into three categories: things that you know, things that you are, and things that you have. Passwords, pins, lock patterns, etc. are in the what you know category. Your face, fingerprint, eye scan, etc. are things that you are, and a card, certificate, or a piece of software that generates determinate but unpredictable numbers are something that you have. Generally speaking, multi-factor authentication involves drawing on factors from at least two separate of these three categories, such as a card and a pin to access your ATM. Microsoft have published the system requirements for Windows 11, and effective the 1st of January 2023, all new devices running Windows 11 except for desktop computers must have a front-facing webcam. They have also laid out fairly modest minimum quality specifications for the camera: automatic exposure, automatic white balance, pixel aspect ratio of 1:1, and a minimum resolution of 1280 by 720. For those who would rather not have this feature, a piece of tape or a stick-on shutter will still be an option, just as it is now. In episode 46, I spoke long form about the idea that the response to the COVID pandemic has presented proof positive that for many intellectual workers, it is indeed possible to work from home. Apparently, Public Employees Federation, or PEF, a labor union representing state workers, agrees. In New York State, PEF has begun circulating a petition directed to Governor Hochul that, in light of periodic resurgences, breakthrough cases, and other hazards that still remain of the pandemic, and in light of the fact that telecommuting has been a success in the state, that the practice should continue for the time being. From the wording of the petition, it seems as though the union is open to eventually returning to the office, but that the time to do so is not now. Speed zone cameras and school zones in the city of Buffalo may be in for a bit of a legal challenge that they are possibly not up to. Buffalo TV station WGRZ is reporting that attorney Karina Teft of New York City, in representing a pair of drivers who were ticketed by the system, has been unable to get the city to provide basic information about the cameras, and that there is no operator to verify that the cameras are reporting accurately. With any other speeding ticket, the issuing officer can be questioned in court over such matters as the means of measurement, how the measurement was calibrated, and whether or not the officer was properly trained in the operation of whatever equipment was used in the measurement. However, in the case of this automated system, there is nobody to question, and not even any certainty that the equipment has been calibrated at all. The City of Buffalo have declined to comment in light of the ongoing litigation. The New York Police Department has deployed technology to detect the use of unmanned aerial systems, or as they're more commonly called, drones. According to a document from the NYPD, the drone detection systems are capable of identifying drone communication links through the use of a variety of antennas and radio frequency sensors. The department claims that their drone detection systems can detect drones in flight within a set range, locate the drone, and the general location of its operator, identify the speed and altitude of the drone, and track its flight path. The detection radius of the technology can span several miles depending on the configuration. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. A case in France is making enforcement of the GNU general public license more difficult. Last year, a case in the Tribunal de Grande Instance de Paris came to a close between software house Entrevert and telecom giant Orange. Entrevert claimed that Orange was in violation of the license for the manner in which they used a library Entrevert had developed called Lasso. The court decided in favor of Orange on the grounds that the matter was not a copyright matter, but rather a matter of contract law. Entrevert escalated the case to the Cour d'appel de Paris, which court judged the same back in March of this year. As a last-ditch attempt, the case was further escalated to the Court of Justice of the European Union, which also found in favor of Orange. While Entrevert is now stuck with all of the legal bills, there is a small twist ending, specifically that they were awarded €150,000 for parasitism, a 60s-era offense in France involving claiming expertise as your own when it was drawn from other sources. Last week, I mentioned a breach of the voting systems in Mesa County, Colorado, in which the county clerk brought in an outside individual, passed him off as a county employee, directed her staff to disable the video surveillance, which they did not do, and permitted the outsider to record the passwords associated with the county's voting systems. This week, the Associated Press is reporting that the breach resulted in copies of the Dominion voting system software making its way out. Copies of the software were distributed at an event in South Dakota. Election security researcher Harry Hursty was at the event and indicated that he and other security researchers were provided with three different copies of the software. The AP is expressing the idea that this provides a practice environment for those who would compromise future elections. I say we're going about this all wrong. If we're going to use computers to run elections, as we do for many good reasons, it's actually a very bad practice for the software to be private. The software should be open source. It should be possible for any interested party to download any and all software associated with these machines at any time in the form of the source code, examine the code, and perform a verifiable build of the software. I can't emphasize enough how important this is, so let me explain why. In layman's terms, the source code for a piece of software is like a blueprint. It provides specific and precise instructions to a computer to build a piece of software, and, to be clear, build is exactly the industry term for the process of turning source code into software. So this is not even a stretch of a metaphor, this is exactly what it is called. There are a handful of tools that are used to carry out a build: compilers, linkers, build automation tools, and so on. Given a package of source code, a specific set of specific versions of compilers, linkers, automation tools, and given an operating system and hardware architecture, it should be possible for an individual with a modest degree of technical know-how to be able to follow a set of instructions and produce an exact byte-for-byte perfect copy of the software that is installed both on the voting machines and on the computers used to manage them. Having built such a copy, it is then possible to use a piece of software called a cryptographic hasher to reduce each file in the package to a number called a hash that can be compared to other copies of the software in order to confirm that the software that is there is exactly what came from this particular source code. This should be a completely provable and completely reproducible process. Now the question is, why do we want this? The answer to this involves a higher degree of technical expertise than is needed to simply do the build, but if the source code is available, then that source code can be examined, looking for evidence of tampering, malfeasance, or just plain bugs and other vulnerabilities. As things stand right now, the software is a black box. Yes, there are copies of it floating around, and yes, Dominion's trade secrets are at risk of exposure. I believe we need to flip the script. Rather than protecting the source code by keeping it out of prying eyes, we need to do the dead opposite. It needs to be public because it's the only way that the public can be expected to trust it. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Funkaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Azriel and to Knight Rider 007 for bringing stories to my attention. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80, and our theme music is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well.